everybody, and welcome back to Come Get a Sip, the podcast where we talk about all the latest happenings in entertainment, in music, and all of that. Thank you for coming. Thank you for supporting throughout this season. It's been so great to see all of the love that y'all have shown, all the reposts, all the shares, the comments, everything. I truly, truly appreciate it. Today, we're going to get into some things. We're going to get into some of the music that has come out this year. It's been a big year for music in a lot of ways, from major stadium tours to big albums, big singles, all of that. So we're going to talk about all of that. And I have a very special guest here to talk about it with us. This is a music expert. Just from seeing his Instagram, I see how much music he likes, how much I sent him my top five list. We'll get into that later. Didn't seem like there was anything that was sort of off his radar. But yeah, I'm very excited to talk about music with him. So please welcome Nick Sly. Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Norris?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. Do you have anything you want to say about yourself? Introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah. So what's up, y'all? I'm Nick. I do A&R at Def Jam. Graduated from college a few months ago and have been doing that since. Kind of throughout college, worked in the music industry across different roles, mostly A&R. But yeah, been focusing on, you know, music with my career, and music's kind of been like my main passion for my whole life. So I'm super excited to talk about what I think has been a really exciting, really dope year in music. Yeah,
I'm very excited to talk about it with you as well, get some of the industry insider knowledge. I'm not gonna ask for any tea or anything, but you know, it's great to have that perspective on the show. Let's jump right in. We're gonna start with our segment called Checking In. This is just a pop culture roundup for the week, talking about some big topics that have been in the news, in the Twitter sphere, Instagram, all of that. This week, in line with the focus on music, we're going to be talking briefly about Pink Friday 2, the fifth studio album from Nicki Minaj. I will just preface with, I have not listened to it. I don't know if it's a secret or anything about how I feel about Nicki and the way she's been moving and operating in recent years. So I have not checked out the album. So I'm not going to give my opinion on it, but other people have given their opinion on it. And generally, it's been pretty mixed reviews. I saw where she had said it was going to be one of the greatest albums of all time. Lots of hype, you know, promoting it as the sequel to her smash debut album, Pink Friday, which raised an entire generation. So, Nick, have you had a chance to listen to the album? And have you seen some of the reactions? What are your initial thoughts on all of it?
I listened to it Friday morning, so like the morning it came out, and I was unimpressed. I thought that it was maybe her worst album so far.
Ooh.
Genuinely. And by no means am I a Nicki hater. Like, I really love, especially her early work, Pink Friday, Pink Print. Pink Print, especially, definitely my favorite Nicki album. And I really appreciate her in that era. I feel like over time, we've seen a general decline in how involved and enthused she seems to be about the music she's making. At least in my opinion, the rollout for this felt a little bit less enthused than it had in the past. It felt a little bit more disconnected than it had in the past. And I don't know if that's where she's at in her life or her career or like what necessarily is a driving force for that. But the music also felt pretty uninspired. Like, out of how many songs were on the track? Like 20 songs on the track list?
22? Yeah, on the digital at least.
There were only three songs that I think I really enjoyed out of a track list of 22 songs, which I thought was concerning. But it wasn't, I'm not going to say the album was awful, but I thought it was her worst work. I did not think it was a good album. And that's my first take on it. I love also going back and re-listening and seeing if that changes. I'll probably a week or two from now, I'll probably re-listen and see. Has anything changed for me? But on first listen, that was my first impression of it.
Yeah, that's the general reaction I've been seeing. I've been seeing a bunch of people posting like how many songs they saved for a lot of single digit numbers. Nicki in recent years has not been a darling in the news in terms of the headlines. There's been a whole bunch of stuff starting with her husband and his legal issues and the legal issues that they faced as a couple in terms of the allegations that they had like threatened one of his victims from the past. That's been a big mark against her career and her legacy. Also, just her general treatment of other female rappers, particularly the up and comers, has been a huge thing. Again, I haven't listened to the album, but I've seen where she had taken shots at Lotto, taken shots at Megan Thee Stallion on the album, and been doing that throughout her music in the past couple of years. One of my biggest things with music, I want the legends to move like legends. You know, I don't want the whole sort of petty back and forth with the new generation, especially when the new generation isn't really like responding. Obviously, Nicki and Lotto fell out last year, but since then there hasn't really been much of a, well, put it on the floor, but you know, besides that, there hasn't been much engagement from Lotto, but there's been a lot of engagement from Nicki and a lot towards Megan Thee Stallion, name dropping Tory Lanez on the album. I just feel like there's a lot of nastiness in that, especially with Meg, given what she went through with Tory shooting her and being convicted and jailed. It's disappointing to see someone who had built up such a massive legacy in the industry, and arguably the most successful female rapper of all time, just piece by piece, bit by bit, throwing it away. That's disappointing. And like you said, it's sort of reflecting in the music. This was a big opportunity, especially branding it as Pink Friday 2, to bring herself back to the forefront in terms of like critical acclaim. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. Now there's some issues as well with some of the rollout for the album. I saw where like the vinyls and the physical copies of the album don't contain much of the track list at all. So there's issues around how much of that will count towards the charts, which we know Nicki loves her some charts. So that's going to be interesting to see play out. I don't hate Nicki Minaj. I don't hate anybody. We love everybody. But I just wish that she would move differently, you know, because she is a legend. And it seems like she's sort of pushing the envelope to see how much she can do before that status is like really genuinely threatened. But I feel like we're getting closer and closer to that. So I don't know. I don't have much else to say about Miss Minaj. Nick, do you have anything else to add?
You said it very well. No, I agree with a lot of those opinions. Like the last 2 years have been interesting for her, mostly in the worst way. It's a shame that even just like outside of the music that everything seems to be in like a general decline for her, like especially right. being such a legend. It's unfortunate to watch like the biggest modern superstar woman in rap to just... And she's kind of doing it to herself, too. It's not really like other people really. She's really bringing a lot of the decline upon herself, which is just it's unfortunate to watch. I wouldn't say the fall from greatness because she very much still is a great in music, but it's not good to see.
Not at all. And I think it's also just a general reflection of like the music industry nowadays and how stan culture has sort of, especially for the artists that really engage with their fans and are always tweeting with them, going on live with them. We see a different aura around them in terms of how people react to their music. I saw where Crystal, one of the hosts of the Read podcast, one of the biggest inspirations for me in this podcast, had received like death threats on Twitter. Even before she really listened to the album, people were already threatening her, saying she should jump off a bridge if she didn't like the album. And I just don't understand, because that's not going to make anybody more endeared to the album. So I don't know. The strategy's all over the place. The rollout's all over the place. But again, wish everybody the best, and we'll see what happens. So we can move on and talk about some brighter topics in music. We're going to get into our Let's Talk About It segment now. Cue Trina.
Let's talk about
it. Today, we are going to be recapping the year in music, 2023. There's a lot to talk about, so we're just going to take it bit by bit, piece by piece, give some opinions, give some insight, hopefully get some music industry insight from Nick. That would be great. And yeah, we're just going to talk about it. So let's get into it. 2023 started off, as the past 4 years have, with Mariah Carey. Hello. At number one with All I Want for Christmas Is You, first number one single of the year. Following that, Miley Cyrus and SZA really took over the charts for the first four, five so months of the year. Miley with Flowers, which became her biggest hit of all time off of her album Endless Summer Vacation, and SZA with Kill Bill, off of her album SOS, which is getting a deluxe version. Lana, very excited for that. But those two songs really dominated the charts. Miley held the number one spot for a long time, and then SZA got Doja Cat on the remix to Kill Bill, which pushed it to number one. So it's really great to see both of them having that success. Also, a big event during that time period was the Super Bowl, particularly the Fenty Bowl, the halftime show by Rihanna. It was a major return for her to music. She had done Lift Me Up for the Black Panther soundtrack last year, but this was a major celebration of her catalog, celebration of her businesses, all of that, celebration of her baby. Congratulations. So that was a big event in music as well. It was the most watched Super Bowl halftime show of all time. Still no music announced though, so I guess we're going to keep waiting on her next album. Probably be waiting forever, but it is what it is. Nick, what were your thoughts on how music started out with the year?
The main thing that like surprised me kind of like going into the start of this year was that throughout the entire history of music, artists are usually apprehensive to drop in December. Like artists usually are not trying to drop in December. That's not a common month because like we talked about with Mariah Carey, like Christmas music just comes back and dominates. Like major artists just don't want to release at that time. It's not historically been a good time to release new music. But last December we had Metro Boomin with Heroes and Villains. And then we also had SZA, obviously with SOS. And those two albums really dominated that month. And then SZA really sustained that dominance all the way from last year. And that felt like, even though that album was technically like a 2022 release, it felt like a 2023 album because the momentum carried so well into those first few months of the year. So I feel like the first few months of the year, definitely like they were dominated. That was like all SZA's time, which was really interesting given that it was a December previous year release. And like, I think that's going to start a trend, maybe even that she's going to continue herself, maybe this week. So we'll see. Hopefully so. That would be great. But I think that that's really going to influence a lot of major artists to start to look at that December release date is, okay, you can make a chart-topping album. And maybe it's even more of a window. If you're a superstar, there's less artists to compete against in that window. You can really dominate the charts. So that was great for music, for her career. Because SZA was already a superstar, I feel like, before the release. But that just ascended her into like being one of the like 3-5 biggest artists on earth, right, which is a point that I love to see her get to. Just because of the quality and the breadth of her music. Like, that's somebody that we want at the top of music. That's just good for music to have SZA as a global superstar. So that was a great start. I loved that for the year. Obviously, the Super Bowl, Rihanna performance was phenomenal, especially given that I feel like a handful of the past decade or so-ish performances, I've been like kind of like lukewarm on. Yeah. So to get like a really outstanding performance there was super dope. And obviously, we want new music from Rihanna, but a cultural moment like that can kind of satisfy that for the time being. We right. still want that album. So hopefully we get new music soon, but we might never get new music, and who knows? Rihanna's got so many things going on. Like, it's so hard to hold her accountable on the music side of things, but
right.
that was a really dope performance for sure. Yeah, when I think the first few months of 2023, I'm mostly thinking SZA and the Super Bowl performance. I think those are the two main trends / headlines that I will look back on and be like, yeah, that was the start of 2023 in music.
Yeah, definitely. Touching on SZA in particular, I feel like she is really carrying the torch just in terms of carrying out a full era of music. You know, so often with music nowadays, it's like you put out an album, it has some buzz for a month or two, and then it's on to the next project. But we're a year removed from the release of SOS, and now she's putting out the Deluxe. The Deluxe has every bit of potential to carry well into 2024. It's great to see her carrying that forward, but also carrying forward R&B in general. And we'll get to that in a minute. But on the Eras point in particular, no pun intended, we also had some major moves from Taylor Swift and Beyonce with their tours. The Eras tour for Taylor Swift, which was a celebration of her entire career, and Beyonce celebrating her newest album, Renaissance. It's been really wonderful to see the way that they've dominated as two women in the industry, embarking on stadium tours throughout the country, releasing number one movies in the box office, supporting each other along the way, not beefing or anything. It's been really great to see that, to see how much it's meant to the fans too. I'm not a Taylor Swift listener, but I respect her artistry. I respect what she means to her fans. And it's been great to see how much joy her fans have derived from her tour. Beyonce, same thing. I'm definitely a huge Beyonce fan. That goes without saying. And seeing an artist of that magnitude 20 years into their solo career, still on top, still selling out stadiums throughout the world. And in particular, to see her celebrating the Black queer community is so special. We have really loved Beyonce for so long, supported Beyonce. I remember when I don't necessarily remember, but I've been told when I was like 3 years old, being in the mall, like, when Crazy in Love came on. So just seeing her really embrace the community and do like a whole tour celebrating like our music has been really special. But yeah, they've been dominating. They've been boosting economies throughout the world, throughout America, positioning these tours within their respective legacies and just the broader legacy of music and of touring and of women in music. Nick, what are some of your reflections from the big years that each of them has had?
I'll start. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. That doesn't mean I'm a Taylor Swift hater, but I listen for kind of like the sake of knowing where she's at sonically, but like I don't really listen beyond that. Mm-hmm. But obviously she did unreal numbers from a touring standpoint, and she's had chart dominance too. She sold over 1 million copies first week, I think.
Yeah.
That's right.
On an album
which
that
is just
almost 10 years
unreal.
Old.
Especially like in this modern era, like where sales numbers are so much lower with streaming and everything, like that number was crazy. Obviously, she did her thing numbers wise. Beyonce, I don't know if we've ever seen, or at least in my lifetime, I can't speak to like the Michael Jackson type era, but in terms of my lifetime, in terms of like what I've been alive to see, there's never been anything even close to it.
Right.
And close to what she's done. Maybe people have done similar things musically, but nobody's done similar things musically, visually, culturally, with a live performance, with how she tours, with how she connects on a variety of levels to people. Like, I think that she is just, and to be 20 plus years in her career, like she started her solo career in the early 2003. So literally 20 years into her career, like it's incomprehensible. And like, I don't know when we will see that again, if we will see that again. And it's not like she's just like going out and like, you know, just singing at a mic. She is dancing fully choreographed, like It is a thoughtful performance curated for every single city that she goes to, like 20 years into her career, for the music to have the impact it did, for the show to have the impact it did. Like, those tickets, the prices were unreal. I've never seen
any ticket prices like those. I don't even want to ever be reminded of that again.
Like, I literally saw, like, in LA at least, there were, you know, everything from like $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for bad tickets, like tickets right. with a bad view of this. Like, I've never seen numbers like that for any type of tour concert. Like, Beyonce's legacy, she could have retired from music and she could have gone off the grid, you know, a few years ago. And nobody would have ever questioned if she was like one of the all-time great performers and musicians. And then to do that over the last year and a half, 2 years, is just like unreal. Like, her legacy is like beyond cemented. I think Michael Jackson, a lot of people would consider him to be kind of the great performer, the great musician superstar. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's many people who would say that Beyonce is not kind of like number two. And if you're talking about the greatest woman superstar in music of all time, she's got a very fair debate for it. What she's done with the last few years is incredible. I didn't go to the Renaissance tour, regretfully so. Those prices, just like rent would not have been met.
Yeah. It was rent or Beyonce. No, it was crazy.
But even just seeing everything, like watching recaps, like talk to a bunch of my friends who went and stuff. And I've heard that it was just like an unreal experience. And I love how much she goes all out for her fans.
Right.
Hats off to Beyonce for real. Like, it's been amazing.
She's on another level, like you said. And yeah, I don't think we'll see anybody ever match that. And if we do, no, they didn't. But it's been just amazing to see how devoted she is to her craft. And Beyonce is not someone who's like online responding to comments or anything like that. And so seeing, like, for example, how for the past couple of years, there's been debates about, can Beyonce sing? Is she like a true star vocalist? Is she like a top vocalist? And then to start her tour out with a set of songs that are most vocally demanding and just killing it night after night after night has been amazing to see. Someone pointed this out on Twitter as well with her dancing, how she wore a whole bunch of different outfits throughout the tour. And if you go to see the movie based on the tour of Renaissance, the cuts between the sequences are so clean. She'll have like 8 different outfits in a single dance break. And you would never be able to tell that anything changed just from like any shifts in where she is on stage or any shifts in like where she is in the dance. She is just such a clean performer vocally in terms of her choreography. It's just beyond anything I've ever seen, past or present. So like you said, hats off to Beyonce. We're still waiting on the visuals, but just like with Rihanna's album, I've kind of given up hope on that. I'm satisfied with the movie. We'll make it work. Mm-hmm. But hats off to her and to Taylor. Their touring success has been huge, but transitioning into hip hop for a bit, there have been a number of artists who have had to cancel whole tours due to low ticket sales. And these weren't like stadium tours. These were arena tours. Some were even theater tours. So it's been really interesting to see sort of, and this is maybe a general reflection on society as a whole, how the biggest artists have continued to sustain that level of like touring stadiums, touring top venues, selling out, while a lot of the younger artists are struggling to fill seats at their tours. It's been a tough year commercially for hip hop in general. There was a long stretch throughout this year and throughout much of the end of last year where there was no hip hop song at number one, no hip hop artist at number one, the longest stretch in a very long time. That was eventually broken by Lotto, who went number one on Jungkook's 7, and then by Doja Cat when her single Paint the Town Red also went number one. But just considering that against like the backdrop of hip hop's 50th anniversary and celebrating the legacy of the genre, obviously there's been so many great hip hop releases this year, but there are questions about just where the genre goes from here. And more broadly, what chances the younger artists across all genres have to really maybe not reach that Taylor Swift and Beyonce level of selling out stadiums all throughout the world, but at least in terms of being able to go on major tours and not have to worry about canceling stops due to low ticket sales. So Nick, as someone who works in music, who works at Def Jam, can you tell us a bit about some of like the industry chatter that's been going on regarding the state of sales and tours for artists, particularly young artists who are trying to make a name for themselves?
That's definitely been a thing. I mean, obviously like we've seen, I think Lil Baby is one of the more notable examples of like somebody who a lot of people perceive as a superstar rapper canceling mm-hmm. multiple major cities because right. of like extremely low ticket sales. And there's a handful of others, like you said, at varying levels from theaters to arenas. I don't know. And especially like given the trajectory that hip hop had kind of in the early 2010s with mm-hmm. say like the emergence of Drake, Kendrick, Cole, it looked like it was becoming the biggest genre in the world. At that time, you would have definitely thought in 2023 that we would have rappers doing stadium tours equivalent to a Beyonce or Taylor Swift size tour. But we just don't really have that other than maybe Drake. Drake had a very successful tour, but Drake is in so many different spaces sonically and culturally. Like he is a rapper. BS, but he is like a pop rapper to the highest extent. It's been interesting. I think that we just haven't really had a new era of like full-blown superstars really emerge into that space. The men in hip-hop also, the live performance that they curate is not really the same caliber of performance and like live performing art that you would get with, say, a Beyonce. If you find a Beyonce fan, they are going to want to go to her concert 1,000% of the time. If you have a Lil Baby fan, it might just be somebody who, you know, plays his music in a car, but the level of listenership is not really that deep. They're not super connected fans, and they're definitely not like, oh, I just have to go see Lil Baby in concert. Like, this is just like a must-see opportunity live. And I don't know if that's like just the nature of performance quality in the genre, or at least how it's been over the last few years. I don't know if streaming numbers are misleading people to thinking, like, it's harder to judge kind of like how many tickets you could sell off of your streaming numbers.
Right.
Because it's obviously not a direct correlation at all. Like, as much as like you would intuitively think it would be, it's definitely not at all. There's some artists out there with 5 million monthly listeners who could sell out an arena. There's some artists out there with 40 million monthly listeners who could not even sell out a large theater. It's really interesting seeing this all play out. And yeah, hip-hop was definitely struggling on the charts this year, like very much. Like you said, Lotto, Doja had moments, Travis had moments, Drake, Uzi, but like we don't really have anybody coming in and becoming a superstar, like a global superstar in hip-hop, really. I feel like at least this year, we didn't really have anybody emerge into that kind of status. I don't know if it's something that will happen anytime soon. I don't know if the internet is becoming so fragmented that it's fragmenting music and it's just harder to become a global superstar like that. Because obviously we see Beyonce and Taylor Swift. These are not artists that emerged in the last 5 years. Right. These are artists that emerged 20 and 15-ish so years respectively and who became global superstars before really the internet became, you know, what it is today. I don't know if that's an issue with the state of music. I don't know if it's the state of hip hop. I don't know if we just need the right artists or the right sounds to emerge and if that's going to happen or not. I think that this was just an off year and I think that the trend will continue to be positive over the next few, but it's definitely been interesting to see that.
Yeah, no, it's been very interesting to see the split between like male artists' performance level or lack thereof versus a lot of the female artists. It's been a big stretch for female rap in general. And this year we didn't see a huge number of like chart toppers or anything, but obviously Ice Spice, who blew up last year, was able to sustain that success in a major way this year as well. Sexy Red has been like the TikTok star of the year. I mean, every week it feels like there's a new Sexy Red song going viral on TikTok, sold out tour. Lola Brooke, Cali, Fendi the Rapper, all making debuts on the Hot 100. Maya the Dawn, Flyin' a Boss. And what's so interesting to me about all those artists and all the other female artists in hip hop is just the variety that they bring. You would be hard pressed to find right now two major female rappers who bring the exact same thing to the table. You know, they're very unique. And I feel like one of the reasons why we've seen female rap having a renaissance that it's having is because, like you said, the internet is so fragmented. So artists are able to find like pockets of the internet, and then listeners are able to find the artists in particular that really match their niche, that match what they're looking for in an artist, what they want to see from an artist, whether you want just like the fun get ready vibes from like an Ice Spice, or you want the more thoughtful raps from Amaya the Dawn or somebody. It's really interesting to see how that split across the genre of just so many different artists doing so many different things has led them all to collectively have major success. You know, they're doing cyphers together all the time. They're showing up at each other's shows, supporting each other. So that's been really beautiful to see. I want to ask you, Nick, as this is all happening, what are some of the shifts that you're seeing in the industry with the success of female rappers lately?
It's been great to see like this year, like rap has been a woman's game. Like, it has not been a year where we've seen the men in hip hop dominating the space. Like I said, there's been a couple of major releases, but like if we're talking hits and moments, I feel like the biggest kind of like hit song from a male rapper, maybe like Rich Baby Daddy by Drake. And that's obviously assisted by Sexy Red and SZA.
Right.
And that song would not have been a hit if it was just Drake. If that was a Drake solo song, nobody would have ever listened to that song. That goes to show you the state of where hip hop is at least for this year and this time being. Like, it's a woman's game right now. And I think that the women are just bringing better creativity. I think that they have a much better grasp of how to market themselves to a modern audience, how to build a character more so than just build music that you're putting out. I feel like a lot of men in rap put out the music and try to let the music speak for itself, but it's such a visual world. Like, you really need to be able to connect with the artists. Then there's so much music out there. There's just little incentive to listen to music with an artist that you can't follow and get behind and relate to, you know, all this stuff. And I think that women have a much better grasp of how to like effectively market themselves and connect with their audiences than men do. And I think that that's helped them a lot. There's also just a lot of like new and exciting sounds. And given that hip hop historically has been such, you know, a male dominated space, I think that these past few years have really given the rise of a bunch of different star women in hip hop. And so it's fresh, it's new, it's exciting. And people are having way more fun with listening to women in hip hop than they are listening to the men in hip hop because of all these things. Creativity from the sonics, from the sounds of it, to the visuals, to the videos, to the live shows that they're putting on. I think that people are just way more excited culturally, visually, musically by what women are doing. And I think reasonably so. And I don't think that's a trend that's going to stop anytime soon. I think that women are just going to keep emerging. It's one of those things that's kind of like a positive feedback loop. You have all these dope women in rap, and then they're inspiring the next generation of dope women in rap. And it's just going to keep on and keep on. I don't know where the genre will be at, say, like 10 years from now. But I think for the next few, like, women are going to continue to dominate or at least hold their very fair share in the genre. My favorite woman in rap is Little Sims. I think she's the best rapper on earth right now. Mm. That's my opinion. Like, I really do think she is the best rapper in the world. Not best woman in rap in the world. She is the best rapper in the world. Like, I really think that she's that talented. And she has such a unique, wonderful style and sound of rap. And then obviously, we have everybody from Sexy Red to Latto to Flyin' a Boss to, we got Connie Diamond. Like, there's so many different styles and sounds, and women in rap are in a really good place. And I think that there's now more potential for them to succeed than there ever has been before. There's more industry support for it. There's more fan support for it, more media support in general. I think it's in a good place. I'm really excited to see where things go with it.
It's also just so cool to see the legacy that they're stepping into, just in terms of that creativity and that drive and that uniqueness. You know, if you think back to like the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, just like today, there's really no two female rappers that were bringing the same thing to the table. Obviously, we have to start with Lil' Kim. Pretty much every female rapper out right now has done something in homage to her. She has just been like the one in terms of creativity and the fashion and the visuals and also just her impact on rap as a music form. Missy Elliott, Lady of Rage, Queen Latifah, Salt and Peppa, Trina, Eve. It's just so cool to see, again, especially against the backdrop of like Hip Hop 50. You look at those concerts that have happened throughout the year celebrating the genre. It'll be like a whole bill of male artists, like just up and down the flyer. And then you'll have like one little line with like some of the female rappers who are going to be present. So it's so cool to see how many we have right now who are all making a name for themselves, you know, booking these major stages like Rolling Loud and all these different festivals, Coachella. Like you said, I'm very excited to see what's to come, who are going to be like the next superstars to emerge next year and beyond. Really looking forward to that. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see the two ladies in the background who I love, Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B. We talked about the winter and the spring earlier with SZA and with Miley Cyrus and Rihanna, but I want to talk about the summer in particular for a moment. Every year there's like a pretty big debate across social media about like which song is the song of the summer. And in the past years, we have seen like one definitive song really take over and be like the sound that can be associated with that summer. So like Despacito, for example, or Old Town Road. But this year there, at least in my opinion, there seemed to be a void in terms of like a major song of the summer that really dominated and that was just collectively the song that could be attached to summer of 2023. There was obviously a certain song by certain country artists who are not gonna name that was officially the song of the summer, but whatever. Why do we think that happened in this year in particular, that there wasn't really a major song of the summer? Was it that there weren't any like releases that really had that potential? Was it that songs came out too late? Is that just a byproduct, like the fragmentation of music? What do you think really played into that void that we saw this year?
I think it's partially due to like the fragmentation that we kind of see now, but I think that there were also just were not that many releases from superstars that had that potential to kind of be like those number one smash hits throughout the summer. Like when I think summer hits, I just think basically the whole Sexy Red album, I feel like she kind of dominated the summer. Her music was like really popping. But like other than her, I guess Doja had a few hits, but they weren't like crazy smash hits. Like Paint the Town Red got played a lot for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's partially due to the fragmentation. I think it's partially due to there weren't really any drops that were like huge candidates to be song of summer. I don't feel like a lot of people were really like gunning for that title this year. And the ones that didn't really execute super well. So yeah, I think it was just an off year in that regard too. I don't know if I could like definitively say like this song was Song of Summer, except for like Ski. I feel like that was maybe like, if I had to name a song, I'd probably say that one was like the hit of the summer, but that's also just from my perspective. So I don't know.
Definitely an off year in that regard. Definitely still, like you said, songs that dominated though, like Ski, bunch of songs from the Barbie soundtrack. But one thing I want to ask about in terms of like the music industry and releases and release schedules is how much of the like song of the summer thing plays a role in how music is released and when music is released, because we'll get to our favorite songs. Spoiler alert, if you're watching on YouTube, this is one of them. Behind me, Bongos, Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion. Love this song. I think it's so fun, and I'm not going to talk about it too much at the moment, but one issue I had with it was that I felt like it came out way too late in the year. You know, it was like mid-September, and you know, you can see it in the music video. They're like on a beach, it's sunny, all of that. But it's like, okay, it's starting to get colder. The days are getting shorter. For such a major release from two top artists, it didn't really do what it could have done. Also, Flo Milli had responded to some backlash she got for releasing her single BGC, Bad Girls Club, and having like a summer pool party theme video in October. In instances like that, what do you think is the issue at play there? Is it timing? Is it like delays? What could be some of the factors that hinder when a song is released, or like schedules and all of that?
We always definitely like want to be like thoughtful about like when we are releasing what song and what project and like how the bigger picture kind of works with everything. I agree with you. Like those are two releases that I feel like also like were misplaced and like kind of didn't really make sense in terms of like where exactly they were dropped. We definitely try to be thoughtful about that and definitely like try to think like how it connects to the season, how it connects to any major pop culture events that are upcoming, you know, whatever, and think about the bigger picture. I can't really speak for either, because I guess Bongos came through Atlantic and then Flo Milli's release came through RCA. I don't know what label Plumbing's on. But regardless, like, I'm not sure how the other labels really handled that. It could be they've got a long-term rollout for something else planned and to fit the timeline that everything else needs to go on. These needed to come out at certain times, or there is like a specific touring opportunity, or regardless, like there might be some bigger picture type opportunities where the release kind of only made sense to fit in a certain time. Maybe they thought that giving this at a different time would like make people appreciate them. I don't know exactly what the thought process was. But I agree with you. I feel like the releases, definitely those two particular examples, I think they were misplaced. And we definitely try to be thoughtful of that. Like the season and the time of year definitely like plays a big role in when I think music connects with people the most. So I think that was probably a misstep on both those releases. But yeah.
Yeah, that's good insight. Thank you. The different seasons of the year are definitely like a big thing that people think about in terms of listening to music. I know right now I'm like fully in Christmas music mode, but just like throughout the fall in general, I do sort of lean more into R&B in particular. I feel like this is a time of the year when R&B artists can really thrive, can really shine, especially with award season coming, Grammys season coming up at the start of the year. So this has been like a pretty big time for R&B and a pretty big year for R&B in general. As we mentioned before, SZA leading the way with SOS at the beginning of the year and just carrying that throughout the year with Kill Bill and with Snooze and just the project in general. Mariah Carey and Miguel both having massive viral hits on TikTok, not with new songs actually, but songs that came out a decade or even 15 years ago. Mariah Carey with It's a Wrap, which is an album track that just came out of nowhere and suddenly had like 2 million videos. Miguel was Sure Thing, which is actually like a hit when it came out a decade ago, but now has become like a major top 15 hit, much bigger than it was before. Victoria Monet and Coco Jones have had big breakthroughs this year. Victoria Monet with On My Mama and 7 Grammy nominations. Coco Jones with ICU and just performing everywhere. So thinking about that resurgence in R&B and sort of where the genre is headed, especially in comparison to a decade ago when music was all about pop and hip hop, and there wasn't really space at the time for R&B to really have a claim at dominance, unless it was like Beyonce during that era of like 2013, 2014. How do you react to seeing the genre sort of rebuilding itself in the mainstream, these artists booking these major opportunities, major hits, taking over TikTok, taking over Instagram, taking over radio? How do you see that trajectory going forward into 2024 and beyond?
I love to see it. And I think that like the trend will definitely keep continuing. Like, I think that like R&B is like very much here to stay. I think it's at a very healthy space. I think probably most importantly, shout out to SZA for like elevating it up to like the upper echelon of the mainstream. Obviously, SZA's last album like had a handful of different sounds and styles on it, but it's still an R&B album. It's still an album that's very rooted in R&B. So shout out to SZA for like really kind of, like you said earlier, carrying that torch and like really giving us a global R&B superstar, right, which I feel like has kind of been lacking for the most part, other than obviously Beyonce. But even Beyonce's last release was much more experimental beyond just the bounds of R&B. SZA has really given us a new global R&B superstar, which has been phenomenal for the genre, I think. It's just at a really healthy place, like all around. Like, I think there are, you know, the global superstar like SZA, you have a handful of superstars below her, all the way down to the underground. I think that there's a lot of like really dope music coming out in R&B, a lot of really dope emerging talent in R&B. I think it's also healthy on a global scale. The UK has been absolutely incredible. The UK's releases in R&B have been phenomenal. A lot of my favorite R&B over the last couple of years has been coming out of the UK. It's an incredible amount of talent over there. I feel like the genre is just globalizing well. There's a lot of talent in it. I think it's in a really good space. And I think it's only going to continue to get better because of where everything is at and where everything is going.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think it's great to also see the touring success of R&B with artists like Victoria Monet having her. Oh, I'm still so upset about it. I'm trying to be grateful because, you know, I know she's going to go on tour eventually again, but it was so hard. Actually, I felt like pricing aside, it was harder to get a ticket for some of her shows than even like the Renaissance tour. Obviously, Renaissance, the stadium, she was doing like theaters, but I just could not get a ticket. I was so upset, but I love that for her because it means, you know, the demand is there. Artists like Tamar Braxton, other R&B artists going on like big anniversary tours. You know, it's great to see that long after the sort of mainstream decline we saw in R&B in like the 2010s, that the genre is really still sustaining that touring success and coupled with like the radio success and the virality of so many R&B songs, it's great to see where the genre is headed. And I'm excited to see everything that 2024 has in store. Well, yeah, that's 2023 in a nutshell. Very interesting year for music, very enjoyable year for music in a lot of ways. And now I want to transition as we start to wrap up into each of our top fives. Now, I don't know about you, Nick, but I had like the hardest time coming up with my my top five just because there were so many songs that I loved. You know, it was like I would have five and then I'd be like, oh, wait, but that song, oh, wait, but this song. And it was just like, I felt like I wanted to like expand it to like a top 10 or something. But anyways, top five, I will start with you, Nick. What were your top five songs from this year?
Just like you said, like my top five was like extremely difficult to put together. Like there were honestly like literally 50, 60 songs I probably could have put. And like 20, 30 that I was like really, really, really considering. But I'll start with Dracula by Kenny Mason. I love Kenny Mason. I think he's doing something super unique in hip hop. I think he's incredibly exciting. One of the most exciting young artists in hip hop for sure. Like, I think he's going to have a really big next few years. Dracula was just such a fun song produced by Coop, who's an incredible producer. Like a very soul heavy, soul sample trap beat. Great song, great energy, like very catchy hook. Great verses on the song. Just such a fun, like, feel-good song all around. I also got Jody on Acid by Wilson. Incredible rapper out of LA. He is going to be a superstar in a few years. So we can mark my words and come back to that. Wilson will be a superstar. Just an incredible song. Like, a great soul sample. Very upbeat, feel-good song. Scotty LaJour also shout out. Great feature on it. Michi Darko from the Flatbush Zombies. Just a very fun song. Unique structure. Like, really quick, like, 30-second first verses. With little samples in there thrown in between them. Great song overall. Love that one. I also got Mancala by Earl Sweatshirt and Ben Staples. Again, beautiful production. An incredible verse from Earl. An incredible verse from Vince. All my first three songs are really just like feel good, great songs. Like incredible rap songs. And then a fourth song I'll throw in, Hold Me Close by Toby Lou. One of the best samples of the year. Just a beautifully... And also, like, there's kind of a theme. These are literally
I was listening to them, and I was like, okay, I'm definitely picking up on some, you know, some patterns. But I love a soul sample, too, so I was enjoying them.
No, so Hold Me Close, again, that's so four straight soul samples start. And that's not every year is going to be, like, my top five is straight soul samples. But these were just happen to be my favorite ones. But Toby Lou, super dope, had a really good year. His career has been growing in the last few years, and that song was phenomenal. And then Lady by Amendi and Chloe God. And Amendi really, I feel like, really had a great year for herself and really emerged, got a lot bigger. And Chloe God, too. Also with Chloe God releasing her debut, two super dope women in R&B that I think are going to be mainstays for years to come. Both incredibly talented. That song is amazing. They complement each other really well on it. The production is really simplistic, but wonderful. Very catchy, wonderful melodies, great hook, phenomenal song. All those top five songs, like, I love. Like, I've still got all five of those songs on repeat, like, to this day.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed all of them. What was the name of the last one again?
Lady.
Yeah, Lady was the one that really stood out to me. I like that song a lot. Ooh, I had a tough time narrowing mine down. But starting at number five, I chose Expensive by Maya the Dawn. It's been so great seeing, like, the trajectory that she's had just starting out and rap last year and already just doing so many major things. Just released her mixtape, Hot Commodity, not too long ago. So many great songs on there, but Expensive really stood out. Everything came together artistically in a very nice way, and in a way that to me made a statement about where her artistry is headed. So I love that song. Number four, this was probably the hardest decision for me. I loved Janelle Monáe's entire album, The Age of Pleasure. Been a fan of theirs for so long, since the Tightrope days. But I was trying to decide between Pain and Pleasure and The Rush, both great songs from that record. The Rush in particular, I'm a huge like Nia Long fan, so I love that song. But I ended up going with Pain and Pleasure. I just feel like it really sums up the album well. You know, title aside, it really captures that like summer beach vibe, that summer love vibe, summer lust, all of that. Number three, I had to go with the Bongos girls, Cardi and Meg. Bongos, release time aside, I felt like this was such a fun song, fun video, and they had their smash hit with WAP 3 years ago. But I felt like this song sort of took the fun meter of WAP and just turned it up all the way past 100. I love the way they're going back and forth on the song. Both of them really are so good at creating music that is just fun. It's fun to hear in the club. It's fun to hear like just anywhere, but especially songs where you can take any lyric and make it a caption. That's like my bread and butter in terms of like what kind of music I like. Number two, I chose Insomnia by Lendrix. Lendrix is a very, very talented R&B singer. Very talented. This song to me felt like a like number one R&B hit. Like it's just so well done. The layered vocals, the instrumental, the way that he develops his vocals throughout the song and really builds upon them and adds in new vocals, adds in layers. It is the perfect like late night, you know, driving home. You hear it in the car and like whatever R&B stations in your city. It's such a good song. And then my number one song was Victoria Monet, How Does It Make You Feel? First time listening to her album, I knew this was going to be the one for me. Like I said with Maya, this feels like a song that just is like an announcement of like, I have made it artistically. Like I am now like in like the top echelon of artists. Like I know what I'm doing. I'm very comfortable delivering and executing a song like this. So yeah, that would be my top five. Again, very hard to narrow it down, but I did end up creating a list of, funny you said 60 songs. I made a list of like 63 songs that I was considering for my top five. So that'll be out. Y'all can look through that if you want. But yeah, as we close, the final thing I want to ask is verse of the year. For me, there's been one artist in particular that has been like pretty much every year in contention for me for verse of the year. But the past 2 years in particular, I feel like this artist has really just done what needed to be done. But I will let you start, Nick. What was your verse of the year for 2023?
Killer Mike, Slummer. Mm-hmm. On his last album, Michael, really beautiful song, like really beautiful storytelling. I say the first verse, or really the second verse on that one, could be verse of the year contenders. There's also a song called Enough by Rory with Reggie and Jay Electronica on it. Jay Electronica's verse on that song. Beautiful verse. So underground rapper named My Name Isn't J-Mac had a song called Leak. And the last verse on that song, phenomenal. British rapper named Zeno Vinci had a song called Filth. Mm-hmm. First and second verse on that song are both verse of the year contenders. There's definitely a few more that I would consider, but I'd say those few, definitely like some of my favorite verses of the year, like really incredible.
For me, I had to go with my girl Cardi B. Last year, Tomorrow Too was my verse of the year. It was just like probably the verse of my life, honestly. If you know me in real life, you know I turn into like a completely different person when that song comes on. Oh my gosh. But this year, her verse on Point Me Too was just epic. I mean, she just got on that song. And I remember when it first like was announced that she was going to be on the remix, people were like, oh, it's like, is she going to like, how is she going to like move on that beat? Like, is it really like the beat for her? And then it came out and it was just like, oh my goodness. I feel like Cardi is so versatile, especially with her features, the way that she's able to go on a song and just do her thing. You know, sometimes she'll take on like the cadence of the other artist. For example, like with this song and certain parts of her verse, Put It On The Floor Again with Latto. But I feel like with this song, she really just, no disrespect to obviously Fendi the rapper, but Cardi just took over this song and just lit it on fire, honestly. It was amazing. So yeah, that is 2023. Really good year in music. Really good setup year, I feel, for 2024. I think there's a lot of major releases that are going to be coming in 2024. I definitely don't think we'll be missing a song of the summer again. I think there's going to be some big hits next year. that really take over. Thank you again, Nick. Thank you for coming. Thank you all for listening. You can check out all past episodes on all streaming platforms, YouTube. Check us out on socials at Come Get a Sip. Nick, do you want to plug your social real quick?
Yeah, you can follow me Instagram at Nick, N-I-C-K dot Sly, S-L-I-G-H. Twitter too, or I guess it's called X now. Same username, I think, with an underscore instead of a dot. But yeah, Thank you so much for having me, Norris. This was great. Happy to talk anytime, bro.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening throughout these first episodes. We are coming back strong in 2024, so get ready. And yeah, have a happy holiday season.
Happy holidays, y'all.
Have a seat, I'ma talk my shit. Just a short little lesson, how to be a bad bitch. Nothing too long, it'll be quick. So sit back, cause I'ma show you exactly how to move like the baddest bitch. Gotta step through the place on your savage shit. You turn
it heads. Come Get a Sip is hosted and produced by Norris J. This week's special guest was Nick Sly. The theme music for the show, Sip Sip Instrumental, was created by Norris J. And the outro song, Move Like the Baddest, was written and performed by Norris J and produced by Sounds by Luna. For more information about the show, head to our pages on Instagram and Twitter at Come Get a Sip, as well as at The Norris J on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. Also, feel free to check out our official playlist, streaming now on Apple Music and Spotify. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on Come Get a Sip.
Lips, swing your hips, and move like the baddest bitch. Gotta step through the place on your savage shit. You turn your heads, they asking what it's giving. Say happy, pretty, classy, rich. Move like the baddest bitch. Gotta step.